welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained.
All right, welcome back to the return of Locals to Legends Wrestling Radio. I'm your host, Gene Jackson, and of course, as always, we are brought to you by WrestlingNewsCenter.com. Check out WrestlingNewsCenter.com daily for news stories, results, columns, upcoming events, and much, much more. Everything you need to stay informed about the world of professional wrestling at WrestlingNewsCenter.com. I also want to remind you, if you need wrestling gear, check out Bomberware. Jack Lord makes high-quality pro wrestling gear. Tights, trunks, singlets, masks, you name it, and Jack Lord can make it happen. So you can find him on Facebook at facebook.com/bomberware, or you can email him at bomberjacklord@gmail.com. Ready to get this one started? I've got my guest on the line right now. He is a wrestling announcer. He's a wrestling reporter. But at heart, just like myself, he's a professional wrestling fan, and I'm talking about the one, the only, Scott Hensley. Scott, how you doing tonight, sir?
Good. I appreciate you having me on.
Glad to have you on, man. I've known you for quite a while, and I see you at shows, and we chat online every now and then, but we've never had the opportunity to really talk extensively on the air or off the air, so I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, as have I.
So, like I said, you know, you're involved in the business. You're a ring announcer. You're a reporter. You do a lot of writing about different shows. But ultimately, you're a fan. And I guess to start at the beginning, what's your earliest wrestling memory? Like, what stands out to you? What made you become a fan of wrestling?
Well, I guess my parents used to just sort of let me watch TV when I got up in the mornings and sort of leave them alone, I guess. And I can remember turning on the TV and turning over to wrestling. And I think my first real wrestling memory is seeing Shawn Michaels kick Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window.
That is definitely one that will stick with you, especially as a kid, seeing Marty Jannetty go through the barbershop window had to definitely make an impression.
Yeah, and my grandmother was actually a big wrestling fan. She lived in the Knoxville area, and so, like, she would have it on every now and then, but she went to a lot of matches in, I guess, the 80s, and before that, she stopped really liking it around the 90s, but she would watch it sometimes. But we actually went to a show together in 1994, in Fayetteville, Tennessee. We went and saw a WCW house show, and I wish I could say the main event was like Flair or Steamboat or somebody awesome like that, but the main event was actually Mark Marrow or Johnny B. Bad versus Max Payne.
Wow. You guys got the same kind of B show that we got down here in Columbus, Mississippi. We got around that same time, we got JYD versus Dick Slater in the main event, which in 1985 would have been tremendous, but in 93 or 4, not so much. And also Johnny B. Badd was on the card. He wrestled the Barbarian, and Michael Hayes was there. The Cole Twins, I don't know if anybody listening to this will remember the Cole Twins with their blonde mullets, but they were there, and it was not what you had envisioned to be a WCW show you would want to see live. But, hey, it was wrestling, and we were happy to get it, I guess, at the time.
Yeah, it sounds like it may have been the same loop even because the Cole Twins were on this one in Fayetteville, and the highlight for me was actually seeing a young Rob Van Dam as Robbie V, and he worked Regal, so that was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would want to see a tape of that nowadays. That would be pretty good. Yeah, we weren't that lucky. We didn't get Robbie V or Regal on our loop. We got Benny Vegas versus Van Hammer was a match that we got as well. So some early Kevin Nash, and before he was too sweet.
Yeah, but anyway, I digress. Well, even I was going to say, even then, I was an autograph collector. Even in 1993 or 1994, and I did get Junkyard Dog's autograph on my program, and got Rob Van Dam to sign Robbie V, and I got the Cole Twins, and then recently I added Bill Dundee to it because he was managing Regal at the time.
Nice, nice. Yeah, Dundee was actually running around at the show we were at, but he was a agent. I guess he was booking the town, and so me being a huge Memphis fan, I just happened to catch him walking through the front of the building and stopped him and got him to sign something for me. And my friends were not nearly as impressed as I was that Bill Dundee was there.
I find that's the case a lot of times when I go to wrestling shows.
Yeah. The hardcore wrestling nerds, such as myself, are sometimes far more impressed by things that other people are like, okay, whatever. So, you know, you were a fan, and eventually you found your way into it. Where do you make the leap from fan at ringside with your grandma to actually getting involved in an actual wrestling show?
Well, I guess the roots go back to Tullahoma, Tennessee. That's where I grew up, halfway between Nashville and Chattanooga. And I grew up going to SWF, which still runs today. Still a lot of the same guys there, like Yukon Jack and some of those guys. Have you ever seen those guys?
Yeah, I've seen them here and there. And I see their posters every week on Facebook that they often feature Jeremy Flint. So that's how they come across my Facebook. But, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And Jeremy Flint was very, I guess he was a key figure sort of in me getting into wrestling because I started seeing his name on these posters for a promotion called Full Throttle Wrestling in Elkmont, Alabama. Did you ever get to go to Full Throttle?
I never got to go see one live, but I have seen DVDs of several shows, and I did get to know a lot of the guys that were on it, and I hate that I didn't get to go. I would love to have seen one.
Yeah, I noticed that they were sort of trying to bring in some guys. I think at one point they had brought in Chris Hero and Sterling James Keenan, or he's Corey Graves now in NXT, and they had brought in some other guys, and so I went to a couple of their shows, and I started writing some reports, and I started talking on their message board, and they were like, hey, we've got a smart fan. And so I sort of became friends with Christian Haim and Jeremy Flint, and I related to Flint having worked in Tullahoma, and so mm-hmm. I struck up conversation there, and then I went to college in Chattanooga, and I noticed that this new promotion I'd never heard of called Ultimate NWA was just an hour away in Scottsboro, and Christian Haim was on that show. So I went down a little early, and I just wanted to see him and hang out. And a guy comes up to me, and he goes, hey, man, do you have any pants? I said, what? He says, do you have any pants? I was wearing khaki shorts. And I said, no, I said, all I have are these khaki shorts. He goes, well, okay, I think those will do. And then he looks at another guy. He goes, give him your shirt, referring to the guy giving the shirt off of his back to me, which it was a polo shirt that had Ultimate NWA on it. And he said, he looks at me, and he says, my ring announcer went to Mobile to a wrestling show to see Bob Holly. Can you be my ring announcer tonight? And I said, I guess. He goes, no, don't guess. He goes, can you do it or not? And I said, sure. And that's pretty much how I got in. And I guess actually before that, everything sort of, I've sort of traced everything back. You know, wrestling is one of those things where you make a lot of contact, and one piece leads to another, and you can sort of trace your way back sometimes. So I went to a show in 2007 in Canton, Georgia, and the show was absolutely loaded with talent. It had Low-Ki, had Claudio Castagnoli, Ricky Reyes, Luke Hawks was there, a very young Caleb Conley was there, Chip Day, Kyle Matthews, and then Ace Rockwell was there. And but he actually worked Claudio and went over on Claudio, which was it was phenomenal to see. But it's just amazing because, you know, that guy lost tons of money to bring those people in because they only drew about 30 people.
Oh, my gosh. You got the who's who of indie wrestling at the time, and people in Georgia are like, yeah, who are these guys?
It was unbelievable. So after the show, I was talking to some people, some of the wrestlers, of course, getting some autographs. And one other note I'll add before I finish that thought was I tried to get some of my friends to go with me, and I was like, come on, Low-Ki is there. He's the TNA X Division champion, which he was at the time. And they said, Low-Ki, he must be pretty Low-Ki because I've never heard of him. So I went down there by myself, Canton, Georgia, probably a little over an hour from Chattanooga, and I was going to college at the time in 2007, and so I met Ace Rockwell after the show, and I told him I was from Chattanooga or going to college there, and he was announced from Chattanooga, so he said, well, hey, man, he said, give me your number, and I'm going to do a show coming up, and I might need, like, a referee or need somebody to put up some posters or something like that. So I gave him my contact information, and one day he calls me, and I meet up with him. He gives me some posters, and, you know, this is a really cool guy to me because he just beat Claudio Castagnoli, and so I put up some posters, and I get to the event, and I'm hanging out, and he says, so you want a referee? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. He's like, come on, man, it's not that hard. You can do it. And so I end up refereeing, and me and another guy ended up sharing a shirt. And so I would put on the shirt, go out, referee a match, or some attempt at looking like I'm refereeing. I don't want to see the video. There's video of it. I won't even watch it. But so I get put in there, and one of the first matches was Jimmy Rave versus Chip Day, and Jimmy Rave ends up just beating the bejesus out of Chip Day's chest. And I don't know. I still feel bad to this day that, like, as a referee, I didn't, like, get in there and get in between them, but I don't know. Like, I wasn't even getting them out of the ropes or anything. Eventually, I think Jimmy sort of tried to Iggy me, and he was like, get us out of the ropes. It's got to be, like, one of the worst referee jobs ever. But then
I've been on some shows where you're in there with that the guy that was the, hey, you want a referee guy, and it's tough. It's definitely tough.
Oh, I admire the heck out of a good referee, and there's so very few of them.
People underestimate what a huge part a referee plays. I mean, it's more than just standing there counting three when it's time. It's man, sharing a referee shirt, that's as indie as it gets right there, man. That's hardcore.
Then the main event of that show, this is the first time I've ever been in a ring. The main event of that show, they put me out there, and it's a three-way match between Abdullah the Butcher, Tank, and Iceberg.
Oh, my God.
It was changed. It was Tank and Iceberg versus Abdullah the Butcher and Nemesis from Georgia.
Wow.
And so, which at this point, Abdullah, this is one of his last matches probably. He's not able to get up in the ring. And so they make it like a Saudi Daisy street fight. And so this guy had come back into the locker room, and they said, now y'all won't be bleeding, will you? And then they looked at him straight in the eye, and they were like, no, sir. So you know where this is going. So they
I can imagine.
I asked Ace Rockwell, I was like, So this is like a street fight. There's no rules. What am I supposed to do? He goes, just count three. That's all you have to do. He's like, all right. So I went out there, and within the first literally like minute or two of the match, like all four of them were bleeding. So it's chaos. And eventually, like, I think eventually, I forget, maybe I think Nemesis pins Tank in the ring. And so then I raised Nemesis's hand, and he, like, tries to grab me, and he actually grabs me by the collar of the shirt and, like, stretches my shirt. And I have to, like, run away from him, and I have no idea to this day if I did something wrong or if they were just hateful or what the deal was. But then the best part, I get to the outside, and Abdullah's out there. And so being the dumb mark that I am, I go up to a bleeding hardcore legend, the Madman from Sudan, and who has a bloody fork in his hand, and I tried to raise his hand. And he wasn't able to get in a ring, but he could still move. So he chased me, and everything was like a shoot run there because I was running for my life to get away from him.
Whew. But, that's a way to get broke in right there.
Good Lord.
So then that was enough to sort of scare me away, and when I figured out that I wasn't going to get rich doing it, then a couple years later, I had the incident, the do you have any pants thing. Chase D was that was Tiny the Bellkeeper at TNA. He had been the ring announcer at Ultimate NWA, and he had gone to see Bob Holly at a show that Bob Holly apparently even canceled on. So I guess Bob Holly got me my first ring announcing gig.
There you go. That's the way to tell it. So this gentleman that was asking if you had pants, who would that be?
Oh, I'm glad you got back to that. Yeah, I'm sort of going in all kinds of different directions. Yes, the man who asked me if I had pants was the one and only Wild Thing Will Owens, who is a heck of a character in the North Alabama scene there. He was very heavily involved for years and years and years, and I think now that the group is going in Alabama, the commission or whatever, he's really slowed down on what he's running and everything. But we were doing Scottsboro every other weekend and some road shows in northwestern Alabama there for a long time. But I learned a heck of a lot from Will Owens. He's one of the cheapest men in wrestling, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's the difference between running the next show sometimes or being able to pay the guys. And, you know, even when you draw the so-called Indy 100, I mean, it's hard to stay afloat nowadays, and you got to really depend on your concession stand, which he did. He always did well with the concession stand. And I know one example of him sort of being a little cheap sometimes. We had a ladder match in Scottsboro, and he got the ladders out there, and somebody said, well, should we pull, like, the stickers off of them? He goes, no, don't pull the stickers off of them. He goes, I'm going to take them back after the match. He goes, don't bend them either.
Don't bend them. Be careful in that ladder match. I don't care if you get hurt. I just don't want to break the ladder. I got to take this thing back. Yeah, my wife and I caught wind of those shows gone Scottsboro, and with my work schedule, I wasn't doing any wrestling at the time. I really hadn't been to a show in forever, and I somehow heard about it. I forgot how I heard the show was there, because it certainly wasn't because they advertised, because you never seen any posters or anything in town. But anyway, we found out about the show, so we went to two or three. And the favorite thing I've seen that goes along with him, being cheap, or I would say being smart, but there was a table that got broken at a show as part of a match. And at the next show, said broken table was at the gimmick table in sections, broke apart with Ultimate NWA logos on there for sale. You could buy pieces of the broken table from the previous show that had an Ultimate NWA logo, and it was signed by whomever, I don't recall now, who had broke Hank and Hank and somebody, you know. But yeah, you could buy a piece of the program. And there's kids running around there with little hunks of table. And my wife's like, that's freaking genius. I'm like, yeah, you gotta,
yeah,
gotta give him credit. That's using everything you got there. But they were some incredible shows. What stood out to me is, you know, I had worked on and been to, I had kind of found a hobby of finding just the most god-awful shows in Alabama. And I would go and watch them, and then I would write, you know, reports about them. And this is before $5 wrestling or anything made it trendy to have crappy wrestling shows. And so every time I'd hear of a show, I would go, and secretly inside I would go, man, I hope this sucks because it makes for a better column on my wrestling news center. And we went to that show, and man, we go, and there's guardrails, there's a video screen, there's a ring announcer in a suit and all this. I'm like, holy crap, this looks like it has some potential. And then, man, you had guys like Christian Haim and Corey Hollis and Adam Jacobs and Jeremiah Flint at the time, I believe it was. And really, really good show. I mean, for all of, you know, Will's reputation about the state for different things, the guy put on one of the best shows in the state, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think my favorite time down there was when we had sort of the Devil's Rejects come down.
Yeah.
With the Reverend Dan Wilson and Seven, and Tank ended up coming in on the babyface side, and Patrick Bentley and Sean Tempers, and that was just an intense feud. I can remember actually, I mean, Seven is a scary looking individual. And I'd worked with him up at NWA Main Event in Nashville, and it wasn't hard to sell being scared of his persona in the ring. And I think he's one of the last sort of like scary characters left in wrestling. So they did a real hot angle at the end of a show. They had been airing these like segment things on the video screen or vignettes, and it said, "He is coming, he is coming." And we had probably, I don't know, several months of buildup of "He is coming." And at one point I asked Will Owens, I said, "Who's coming?" And he looked at me and honestly said, "I don't know."
when he gets there, I guess.
So eventually he figured out that he wanted "He" to be the Reverend Dan Wilson, who is just absolutely one of my heroes in wrestling. And I talk to him several times a week by text message just about wrestling and everything. And I mean, he's one of the greatest promos that I've ever heard. Some of his promos just give you chills because they're so just unusual and they just capture you. And I convinced Will that to bring some of the Chattanooga guys down. And so sure enough, he got Dan Wilson to come down. And so I think it was Christian Haim and maybe Adam Jacobs had taken on Patrick Bentley and somebody, but the hot angle was that Seven and maybe Tempers and Patrick Bentley came out, and they just beat the stuff out of Christian and maybe Corey or Adam Jacobs. I think it was Adam Jacobs because he had family in Scottsboro, and so he was always a baby face, and it was really easy to get heat on him by just giving him a good beating. And so they ended up, the music hits after they win the match, baby faces go over in the main event, and then the music hits and it says, "He is coming." And then it says, "No, he is here," or something like that. And then the Devil's Rejects music hits. Dan comes out, Seven comes out, Patrick Bentley and Tempers come out, and they lay the beat down on, and then they take plastic bags and they put them over the heads of the baby faces, and they throw them. They have, I guess, ropes, and they throw them over the top rope, and they're just sitting there strangling them, and like there's kids crying and people screaming, and it was amazing. And I remember being so scared of what, like, I sort of knew what they were going to do, But, like, I didn't want any part of that. I wasn't going to try to be the brave ring announcer or a staff member who got in the way. Nope. When their music hit, I actually got on the other side of the rail.
Yeah, I got to say, Dan is one of the best managers I've seen in the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years, because he's not your generic heel. Because there's not a lot of managers left, but most of them all fall in the same generic category. And Dan's just such a unique character. And then, like you say, with his promo ability mixed in, and then, you know, the Devil's Rejects, the whole group that he brings to the table. Yeah, the first time I saw him, I was like, wow, this is something completely unique and something I hadn't seen. And I was really impressed. It made me, you know, even as a worker, I was like, I got to come back to the next show and see where all this is going, because it was, yeah, like I said, it was top notch. And for a show in Alabama, it was completely surprising.
Still to this day, I mean, I see posters for Mad Dogs GCW, and I know they have some great guys down there, but that's really the only promotion that I see posters for that I think, you know, that's a good promotion. I know Wrestle Birmingham will run every now and then, and they seem to have some pretty good matches and things like that, but for the most part, I mean, I don't see anything come out of Alabama.
No, I mean, you know, Pro South has a pretty good show. They don't have a lot of names or recognizable faces as far as, you know, like, other than, like, Jimmy Rave is there. Was pretty regular there for a while. Not so much here lately. He's working that other show. But, you know, Kyle Matthews and guys like that. But, you know, they put on a consistently, you know, good show. But I don't know. It's kind of quiet over there to itself in Piedmont and everything. They don't get the attention that a GCW or Wrestle Birmingham does. But, you know, I would say the ones you just named, I mean, those are the top three right there. And then there's just so much other crap that goes on.
I do like a lot of those Pro South guys. I forgot to mention them. And I do see their posters and everything. And I know you do have some involvement with them. And I saw where Ace Haven, I believe, was either one or was maybe like one of the top runners up for like the most improved award in Georgia. So, I mean, I know he travels some.
Yeah.
I know he's heavily involved, or I think, is it his father that owns and runs that?
Well, his father owned Pro South, and his father recently stepped out of it and he's running it now, but
oh wow.
And he's had that stigma of, oh, that's his daddy's promotion and all that. But, you know, he's gone to Peach State and his dad doesn't have any hand in that, and he's gotten pushed over there. He's been the Georgia champion, and him and Adam Jacobs wrestled Jeff Hardy and somebody here several months ago, and I think he's starting to prove himself. I think him getting nominated for that award, and I'm not big on wrestling awards online and all that crap, but I was happy for him, because I know it's been, like I say, a stigma of his, of, well, the only reason he's done anything in wrestling is because his dad runs that promotion. But he's stepped out from there, and he's done some other things in other places. So I think he's getting his name out there and starting to, you know, shed that reputation finally. So that's good for him.
And he was a guy that came in early to Ultimate NWA a couple times, and was one of those guys that you could tell just really had a passion for professional wrestling, but you look at him and you just think, oh, man, you have such bad genes to be a wrestler, because he was such a small, skinny kid and still isn't a big guy. But as far as passion goes and hard work goes, I mean, he's way up there in that.
Yeah, I'm a long way from then. The guy that I'm sure you saw wrestle at Ultimate NWA compared to the one you've seen wrestle Kyle Matthews at the Chikara show they did in Piedmont was far and away different. And that was something fun and interesting when Chikara came to Alabama. And don't know if it's anything you'll see again based on what Bryce Rensburg said on Colt Cabana's show, but hey, it was fun for once, right?
What exactly did he say?
They were kind of naming off how, you know, they had gone some, as Cole put it, you know, some odd places, and it got over some places and it didn't get over in others. And he was like, well, you know, you have some good ones, and he named a couple, you know, bigger towns. And he goes, then you have your Piedmont, Alabama's. And, you know, he said, we got such a good offer there, we had to try it. And he said, you know, we went, and, you know, I don't think we'll be going back. He said, it wasn't bad. He said, you know, it was, you know, he said, we had a pretty decent turnout, but, you know, I don't know that we would go all the way down there again. And, I mean, he was there. I mean, they had about as big a crowd as they could fit in that little place. But
oh, yeah, that's why it surprises me. But I guess just the size of the venue is the only thing there. I mean, did they expect a bigger venue? I mean, they had to know before they came what the chances.
Well, they knew, because I've had a huge hand in getting that done. I'm actually the one who went to Quackenbush and got the whole ball rolling. To make it happen. And he knew the size of the venue and all that. I think it's just a matter of the reality of getting that many wrestlers down to Alabama and paying them based off of how many people you could cram in that little building. Just wasn't feasible, because, my God, I mean, they brought pretty much the whole shebang. I mean, there was, I'd say probably 80% of the roster was there that night. I mean, it was, you know, when they had the meeting with the wrestlers that afternoon, they filled up the entire bleacher section of just all the wrestlers, crew, and referees, and all that, you know. So.
Wow, yeah.
But it was a unique experience. I enjoyed it. I got to see all the behind-the-scenes inner workings of Chikara, and it was cool for me. It ruined it for my wife. My wife's like, well, I didn't want to see everybody with their masks on. So she came out of it less of a fan of the car. And I found it to be very interesting. But she managed to not see Ultramanus without his mask, so that was saved. So she's happy about that. But she saw most everybody else. So.
Yeah, and he also came down for IWA Deep South, which, you know, they have the Carnage Cup coming up. Ultramantis is a veteran of the Carnage Cup.
I know. Who would have thought, right? And
yeah, did I see that you were planning on attending, I guess it's Carnage Cup 10?
Yeah, I'm actually involved in Carnage Cup 10, believe it or not. I'm actually presenting a match at Carnage Cup. I guess I'm the last holdout of LXW. LXW came and has apparently went, and I'm bringing a piece of LXW to the Carnage Cup, which should be fun. I don't know how the Carnage Cup fans are going to react. I mean, to my knowledge, I've watched the majority of them on DVD, and I don't know that anybody has ever come out and cut a promo or done anything anti-deathmatch at the Carnage Cup, so I may need police, you know, security and the National Guard to get me out of that building once I go out there and say the things I planned to say that night about my feelings on death matches and such. But as I told Kevin, I think it'll bring a whole new dynamic to it, and you know, it should be interesting. So, but yeah, I plan on doing more than a 10. I plan on being there and stirring up hot with all the hardcore deathmatch fans, because, dude, there are people who travel from just ungodly distances to come see that. And since you brought it up, I'm glad you did, because I wanted to at some point in this interview. That kind of segues into it. You, as a wrestling fan, what is your feeling on deathmatches?
I think there are some that are sort of fun to watch, and I hate to use the word tasteful, but I'll stick with fun to watch. But I think there's a real thin line where it just goes beyond fun to watch and transitions into just blood for the sake of blood, or, I mean, just totally lacking any psychology, just where they start the match with throwing light tubes at each other and cutting each other. And
yeah.
Some of that, to me, I mean, I don't want to see people suffer. I mean, a big boom kapow and, you know, something like that, I mean, that's fun for me. But when they start, you know, really, and screaming and bleeding, and, I mean, that to me is not enjoyable. But, you know, my buddy Tank from Chattanooga is in the tournament again. He actually texted me, and he said, you know, I'm working Carnage Cup 10. And I believe my response was, dang it, I guess I'll go. So, I mean, I sort of hate to support it because some of those guys just go way too far, in my opinion. But I do enjoy going out and supporting Tank because I think he builds to the big spots, and he's still that big, tough guy, and I certainly feel sorry for anybody who takes his headbutts.
Yes, definitely. I respect what those guys do and the fact that, you know, they can get there and do that. Me and Kevin have become friends now to the point that he kind of respects my view of it, and I respect his. He's a huge fan of it. And to me, the only thing relative to wrestling is the fact there's a ring in the building. It's not wrestling. And I don't mean that as a knock. I don't want them guys to get mad at me, but I mean, it's not wrestling. Now, there's an art to it for some. There's guys like Tank and them, they know how to work it. They know how to make the most out of it. And then you've got other guys who don't know how to work as well, and so then they get over with going off the deep end with the brutality and like you said, taking it way too far, in my opinion. And I don't dig that, but apparently there's enough people that buy these DVDs because apparently they're his biggest seller. And there's people that travel from as far away as New Jersey to come see it. And so if they want to see it, more power to them. But, and especially in something else is over the years. Like, I used to, when I first watched these out of morbid curiosity years back, I didn't know any of these guys. It was just, you know, spectacle. And now that I've gotten to know Insane Lane and, you know, I've known Spider Boudreaux for years from way back and like Independence in Mississippi and things like that, it brings a whole other element because you watch these guys, you go, oh, God, I don't, you know, damn, don't do that to yourself, man. I sat there in Coleman and watched Spider get stabbed with a box cutter and was just sick.
Bad I did, yeah.
Oh, my God. But, you know, if that's what they want to do and there's people that want to pay to see it, great. But I think that's why this angle is going to get over, because Kevin and them know that while I do respect what they do and I don't mean it out of any kind of malice towards them, I do mean what I'm saying when I go out there and say what I'm going to say. And I think the fans are going to know I mean what I say, and I think that's why it will get over, and I'll probably be the most hated person in deathmatch history once it's said and done. But I think what we're going to do is going to be – do what?
I was going to say, I don't know, you've got a long way to go to get to Ian Rotten status.
Well, not in that vein. I don't want to be the most hated person as far as in the same way that Ian is. I mean, as a character, not as a person. And as somebody who's raped the business for – anyway, that's a whole other podcast. But so you will be in attendance, and I'll be in attendance, and we'll see what happens. It seems every year they up the ante, and I just pray every year that this isn't the year that they actually make good on the name and somebody dies doing this stuff, because, you know, we've had a stabbing. Now what's next? You know, shooting naturally is going to be the natural progression of it. So I hope I'm not around for that one.
Yeah, and I just also try to think big picture, and I look at what's happened in Alabama with the commission. And I really worry about that happening in Tennessee because, you know, the lawmakers are going to want to keep things safe. And, you know, if somebody calls the police, which did the police get called at the last show?
I believe they did. I left early because
I
cracked
got out
my ribs in that god-awful match I was in. less said about that, the better. But, yeah, and I wasn't even in a death match, and I got my ribs broke just because that clown didn't know what the hell he was doing. But anyway, so I got on out of there. But, from what I heard, it was – there was some – the police were – and I've been told by some guys that had worked just the regular show in that building that if they went on too late, they'd call the cops. God forbid somebody was over there chasing somebody with a weed eater or something. Who knows what they're doing. People are getting thrown through beds of barbed wire and – hypodermic needles and everything else, I mean, there's no telling who will get called then.
Yeah, and the whole thing about the commission is I believe that it's a good cause, but I don't believe that it's not carried out in an effective manner, because people cheat the system, and it's not really even a system, it's just pay to play.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just, look, you know, you're going to pay us $30 a piece and $100 for promoter, and then you can do whatever you want, but we're just going to get our piece of it, you know. Because they show up once a year to get licenses, and then you don't see them again. So, yeah, it's a joke. And it was the same way in Mississippi before it finally fizzled out over there. And I hear Alabama's pretty close to fizzling out, too, and that it's not going to be around a whole lot longer. But,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
as long as they can squeeze
money out of everybody, I figure they'll stay around.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much killed Kentucky. I mean, you still got OVW, and there's a couple promotions up there. But, I mean, nobody wants to run Kentucky because you do have the commission and everything. And they can go to the border towns, and, I mean, they feel like they're doing just as well and probably are.
Yeah. Yeah, I had heard some of them prices in Kentucky for wrestling licenses and promoters' licenses. And I don't know, is it Kentucky where you got to have all the different tests to be able to get licensed? You got to have all these blood tests and this and that.
So.
I know Louisiana's like that, too. Cost a fortune just to get in a match, that much less. And I know what wrestlers get paid, so I mean, you know, it's like, oh, how can you even afford to do a show in Kentucky or you know, Louisiana? You're gonna go in the hole before you ever even put gas in the car. But anyway, before I get off on that, yes, I've already had my first promoter try to cut my pay because of the cheap gas, and I cussed him out. So we cleared that up pretty quick. I knew it was coming, and it took only the second week of cheap gas before I go, hey, since gas is I know you drive 4 hours, but since gas is cheaper, and I shut him down right there. So you knew it had to happen, but anyway. So you're involved in some other promotions right now. Tell me what all you got going on.
Well, the only thing I'm actually committed to right now, and it's sort of the way I like it, because like you said, you know, I am just a giant fan. You know, I went and saw Ring of Honor in Nashville, I guess last weekend, and it was phenomenal. And, you know, I like to run down to Georgia and catch some different promotions down through there. But working as a ring announcer, I am working for, it's now called Great American Wrestling in Knoxville, Tennessee. We are going to tape our first set of TV tapings as Great American Wrestling. We've been running as Southeastern Championship Wrestling. It was a project that David Marquez from Hollywood came out and helped get off the ground, and they've got a great partnership with Fox 43 in Knoxville, and we've actually got a time slot at noon on Saturdays in Knoxville. So I've heard numbers anywhere from 17,000 to 20-something thousand views per week for that show.
That's nice.
Yeah, and
that's a very good time slot.
Yeah, extremely talented group of guys up there. Shane Williams, I mean, Shane Williams as someone who doesn't care about the fans, I mean, just as the heel, you know, it doesn't get much better as a heel than Shane Williams. You know, I got to watch him up at the Crossfire shows in Nashville, and I think that was just proof that he can really get in there and go with anybody, and just the story he tells in his matches, and he can just be so hateable.
It's so weird. I've only worked one show with Shane Williams, and or I had it. My friend Memphis Monroe tagged with Bill Dundee, and they were the heels against a babyface Shane Williams and a guy by the name of Danny Dollar. And I was just dumbfounded. Like, why is Dundee the heel and Shane is the babyface? This is so backwards. Well, they made it work. You know, they're both professionals, and it got over with the crowd. But I just, you know, it was very awkward to me. I just thought those roles should have been reversed. But big, you know, good time working with Shane, and he was really cool to work with and a super nice guy in the back. And I'm glad to hear he's doing so well, because, man, I'm seeing his name pop up on shows all over. He's got that gig in Knoxville, but I see he's doing a lot of stuff in the Carolinas now, and he's catching on, and he certainly deserves it.
Yeah, he's a good wrestling mind, and also, like you were saying there, with him being the fan favorite, sort of. I mean, he in Knoxville, I mean, he still says he is from Knoxville when he comes out, so the fans really like him, and he's just so genuine out there. I think that his ring persona is such an extension of who he really is, and that he is so passionate about wrestling and just working for the fans, that they do appreciate him so much that it is hard for him to be hated. But I know that he can turn that switch on too and go either direction there. And then also one of my favorite tag teams anywhere have been working with us in Knoxville, the Washington Bullets, John and Trey Williams. Those guys are fantastic. Have you got to see them?
Yes, I've seen them live a couple of times, and yeah, those guys are awesome, man. I see them that they're gonna get somewhere down the road.
Yeah,
if they
really
don't, it's a crime. If they say don't, they deserve to.
Yeah, they've gone down, I guess, in 2014 or maybe into 2013. I know they did go down and work FIP in Florida, which, you know, it's still a legitimate promotion. You know, it's not as big as it once was, I think. But they also worked Vintage Wrestling, and which they've got a pretty good roster down there with Vintage Wrestling. And I actually have family in Far East Tennessee, and they went up and worked a show in, I guess it was Kingsport. They went up and worked for Bo James. So I was already up that way to see family, so I got to go see them work a show. I guess it was a couple days before Thanksgiving there.
Cool.
But
sounds like that's going to be a heck of a deal over there.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've just named two people there, or a person in a tag team, but also we've got a former TNA star, Crimson, Nashville favorite Hammerjack, out of, I guess, West Virginia, Bam Bam Erickson, Lance Erickson. He's a real old school throwback, sort of reminds me a lot of Tank. I mean, he's a big mobile guy that, you know, he's very capable of roughing people up, and he's somebody that the crowd really sees as very legitimate and takes very seriously. We've got Ace Rockwell from Chattanooga, Sean Tempers, who, you know, I know you said you don't care for the Georgia awards or whatever, but I thought it was really cool that his peers honored him with the Georgia Wrestling History Awards. Sean Tempers was honored as like the top overall wrestler in the state of Georgia, which is funny because he lives in Tennessee. But but yeah, all the shows he works are mainly in Georgia. So he is going to go up and work in Knoxville. Former UTC football player Gunnar Miller, he's going to get some opportunities up at Knoxville. He actually had a tryout with the WWE several months ago. And so he's working on some things, I guess, and getting some more experience. But just he's going to be a very talented individual, and he's already just a top-notch person to just be around. And he's got a great mind and a lot of dedication on him, and good minds around him. He's working down at Empire Wrestling in Rossville, which I would put that show just above almost anything in the Southeast, because they do have the production with the video screen. They've got, like, the fog machines for the entrance. They've got an entrance ramp. And then Andrew Alexander books that show. And, you know, he was acknowledged as the top booker in Georgia. But he really goes off of sort of what I recognize as a Bill Barron's formula, where just every match actually means something. And that's so different from what I sort of came into the business on with Will Owens, where it was, who do we have here? Okay, there's five of us. But, you know, Will had the spot show mentality, and then later when we got into Scottsboro, they sort of went with the story booking, but at Empire, they're there every first and third Saturday, and they really go with a story booking where the stories are staggered, the feuds are, and I mean, it's entertaining top to bottom. They really play the guys' strengths. They pair a lot of the younger guys up with older guys. They've got guys like Butcher Bobby Hayes and Tank and Tempers and Ace Rockwell, and like bring in Kyle Matthews and even Bobby Moore, Lamar Phillips, guys that have been working for 10 years or maybe even close to 20 years in the case of Bobby Hayes. But it's just,
yeah,
there's so many great wrestling shows in the Southeast if people are willing to get in the car and travel an hour or two.
Well, I noticed that. I was reading one of the things you posted on the Mid-South board here recently, where it was kind of a build-up to the next big show for Empire. And as I was reading, you know, you had the card listed, but each match had a backstory, had a build-up, and there was something in every match who had been following the shows. You know, there was something in every match to hook you and bring you in for the show. And like you said, it wasn't just built around the main event. And then, oh yeah, there's four other matches. Every match had a backstory and a build up. And I think that's really important. And it is something that a lot of bookers don't utilize. And, you know, it pretty much on a lot of shows, if you're not in the main angle, you're not in angle. And, not only is it kind of cheat the fans, but you know, the wrestlers don't have the opportunity to learn how to build a story and progress a story and you know, when be ready when they do get in that main angle, because they've already been working angles on the lower card. So that's impressive. I've never been to an Empire show, but everything I've ever read and seen of them has been very impressive. I would like to be able to take one in one of these days.
Yeah, I really think that it's got to be one of the top, if not the top shows as far as booking and production and everything goes. They're actually starting a sort of like a developmental show on Thursday night there. It's going to be Pro Wrestling Rossville, and we've had a couple different promotions pop up around Chattanooga recently, and a lot of younger guys getting involved, and they get in there and they realize that there's a lot of experienced guys around too, and that they need to learn and sort of catch up. And it's really hard for guys to catch up when everybody you're in there against has been in wrestling for 10 years, and all they want to tell you is that, you know, you're not any good. So these guys are sort of banding together to come and get some experience and and work in front of a live crowd and try to, like you said, you know, work the angles and feuds and get experience with promos. And they're going to do it on a Thursday night, and it's $3 to get in. It's going to be held at the Empire Arena, but that way, you know, they're doing it probably in front of, you know, I don't want to cut them short, but, you know, 30 fans rather than 230 fans. You know, I don't.
Right.
It may surprise me. There may be, you know, 230 fans there on Thursday night.
Well, it may build to that eventually, you know, once they start getting it over. But it just merely from the fact it's harder to draw on a Thursday night, we'll cut that in half more than likely.
Yeah. And one of the guys involved with that, I'm not going to say who he is because he doesn't want to be outed as the booker, but I actually asked him jokingly. I said, can I come in on a Thursday night and give a locker room speech to your guys? And he said, okay. And I said, I'm going to call it Don't Be You. I pretty much laid out, you know, the guy is a good wrestling mind. He's got a good physique. He works out a lot, works hard, and he's very talented, but nobody knows who he is because he never leaves Chattanooga. And I told him he stays in Chattanooga like he's on parole or something, and it's against his parole to leave Chattanooga. And he said, yeah, that'd be great. So I'm going to go in there and tell those guys that You know, it's not about staying in one place and being just a big fish in a small pond, that you have to get out there, you got to get your name out there, and you have to represent yourself like a professional in any business. But, you know, you now with social media, oh my goodness. I mean, does it not kill you to see some of the things that people post on social media?
Oh, yeah. It's. I can't get these guys that, you know, you either have a worker profile or you don't. And, I mean, and I have one that's, you know, Gene Jackson, and I have one that's my real name and my real life. But, man, you'll have these guys that one day you got to sit here and read where they're posting promos back and forth each other. This Saturday night, you're going down. I'm taking that title. And then on the same profile, there's a picture of them together at Wendy's, you know, before or after the show. Or they're at Walmart together, you know. And then an hour later, they're right back at it. Let me tell you something, man. You're going down. I'm like, what in the world? I mean, I realize kayfabe's dead, but you can't go in and out of it like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I'm gonna tell them, act as if anyone you will ever want a favor from is watching you at all times.
There you go. Well, that's good. It sounds like you're going to give them some sound advice, and that they may not get anywhere else. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll probably fall on a lot of deaf ears, but you know, if just one of them listens, and I'm also going to talk about just briefly, just you know, setting yourself up for success in your private life and in your professional life. So many of these guys that you know they get girls pregnant, or they have wives or girlfriends or both. And they have, you know, real dramatic people that they surround themselves with, and they can't leave because baby's going to get mad, or,
yeah.
You know, or they have where they change jobs every 2 weeks or something. I'd love to see some of these people's resumes, but, you know,
I tell you, the day I ever give my locker room speech, it's going to be the day that indie wrestlers can create half the drama in the ring that they do on social media, they'll all be superstars.
I like that.
I mean, Lord, I mean, you'll see guys that don't show a lick of personality and can't tell a story in the ring to save their life, but, man, you go look at their Facebook, and like you say, they got the wife drama, the girlfriend drama, the baby's mama drama, and this one's sleeping with this one's girlfriend and wife, and it's just, oh, my gosh, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely embarrassing.
Yeah, and as somebody who works in, like, a professional business environment, you know, I have a master's degree in business, so, you know, I'm around people who have guided me and who have laid out standards of, you know, we have a social media policy at work, and, mm-hmm. You know, I just wish some of these guys could sort of understand that.
Absolutely. We're here at the wall of almost being out of time, but there's one thing I do have to ask you about, and I think this took place while it was still known as Southeastern, because I know you're just now moving into the Great American stage, but tell me about having Jim Cornette in Knoxville recently, because I'm a huge fan of Cornette, and thanks to FanFest, I've got to spend some time around him. Tell me about your experiences with Jim Cornette.
Well, Jim was extremely helpful. He was extremely hands-on with really everybody who approached him and some who didn't approach him. But he was really just trying to give good advice. He sat down with the booking team and went over everything. And they told me, as the ring announcer, they said, go out with Jim, and he's going to cut a little promo about being here to scout talent, and Sean Schultz and Lance Erickson are going to come out, and Sean Schultz is going to say, you know, if you're looking for talent, right here I am, and Cornette's going to say, well, it's not you that I'm looking at, and then Erickson's going to get in his face, and he's going to say, whoa, 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 how do you know it's not you? And then they're going to argue, and then they're going to walk off. So I said, great. So we go out there, and all that happens, and then Jim and I are awkwardly standing in the ring, and I put the mic down, and I mouth through my teeth, so, like, I'm not moving my mouth. I said, do we have anything else? And he looks at me. He goes, no, we don't have anything else. He said, don't leave the house if you don't know how to get home. So then we go to the back, and I'm getting ready and to leave, and he looks at me, and he said, "Would you leave your house if you didn't know how to get back home?" I said, no. He goes, "Well, don't do that when you're going out there." He goes, "Know how to get back home." Okay, thank you. Which it's great advice. It really is. You know, there's a lot of awkward moments in wrestling, and especially indie wrestling, and you know, it's something that I definitely need to work on.
Well, he definitely delivers his messages in the most unique way, but he's got a lot of knowledge, and he doesn't always share it in the most diplomatic way, but it's definitely memorable and sticks with you, I'm sure.
There was a guy in the audience that was sort of taunting him. He was yelling out, "There's a Knoxville promoter that says, 'Who's your daddy?'" And the guy in the crowd was yelling, "Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?" And Jim Cornette gets to the back, and he goes, "Somebody kick that guy out of here." He goes, "I'll give him money out of my wallet right now." He goes, "That guy's trying to take over the show." I believe they quieted that guy down very quickly, but he was willing to pay for that guy to leave.
Nice. Well, Scott, man, an hour flew by, and I've been looking forward to having you on, and it's been fun, and gosh, we've barely scratched the surface of all the different wrestling nerd talk we could have, so I definitely want to have you back on one of these days. Maybe following the Carnage Cup, we'll have you on again, and we'll sit and share our thoughts of what went on, and if we're legally able to talk about it at that point, depending on what happens. So.
We may be witnesses, yeah.
If we're not subpoenaed.
I appreciate you having me, and I really just consider myself one of the luckiest wrestling fans on earth to get to do what I do, work with who I work with, and to meet cool people along the way. I count you in that group. You know, I know that you have a lot more experience actually working in the ring, or a different type of experience with actually working in the ring. And, you know, I really look up to that and the fact that you can still, you know, be a huge fan and, you know, do the coverage that you do for wrestling.
Well, there's a lot of guys that take themselves way too seriously and think once you've stepped in the ring, then you're beyond that and somehow that's beneath you or whatever. But I'm still, you know, I've never done anything of much note in wrestling as far as being a wrestler or anything like that. So I still ultimately think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm more of a wrestling fan than anything else. And I enjoy covering events. And I was booked in Tupelo and was glad of it. It was a TV taping, so I mean, it was cool to be there. But at the same time, the fan in me was sick that me and my wife weren't able to go to Ring of Honor this time and see the show and hear that it was such an amazing show and had the largest crowd they've had yet from what I read.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It was definitely disappointing not to get to be there, but, you can't be at all of them. But I appreciate the kind words, and I feel the same way. I consider you a friend, and you're definitely one of the best announcers I've seen. Like I said, that was one of the things that made Ultimate NWA stand out to me because you looked professional, you carried yourself professionally, and did a heck of a job with the ring announcing. And I think it's an afterthought. You know, we talked about referees earlier, and there's guys that'll they'll get a nice ring, and they'll spend a lot of money on wrestlers, and then they'll send some guy out in a sweatshirt and blue jeans to be the ring announcer, and then just whoever they found out back to throw on a referee shirt and be the referee. And it's like, you know, the first thing you see at a wrestling show is the ring announcer come out, and that sets the tone. And man, when I, you know, see some guy in a Duck Dynasty shirt out there ring announcing, it sets the bar pretty low.
Yeah, I appreciate the compliments there, and yeah, I have to set a standard when I go out there.
Well done. Well, all right, my friend. Thank you for coming on, and we will get this posted up, and you feel free to share it anywhere you like, because we love to get as many listeners as we can, and like I said, this whole show is not about me getting on here talking. I like creating a place for guys to come on here and getting a chance to talk and share their thoughts on wrestling, share their stories with guys who don't normally get a chance to. And a lot of people download the show. A lot more people listen to it than I ever thought when I first started it. And it kind of gives people a chance to see another side of guys that you don't get to see at a show. So that's what we're here for. And I thank you for being a part of it.
Thank you.
All right, Scott. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
All right, that does it for this week's show. Again, I want to thank Scott Hensley for being on. And before we go, I want to talk about a few upcoming shows. Pro South Wrestling every Friday night, 627 Southern Avenue in Piedmont, Alabama. Doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time is 7 p.m. Tickets are only $8. Seats are first come, first served, so get there early. Kids 4 and under are free. So come out every Friday night and see your favorite Pro South stars in action. Also, IWF Slam TV is back. That's right. Check out IWFSlam.com for all the info on the upcoming TV tapings and how you can see IWF Slam on your television coming up on February the 7th. That will be the night they debut on WCBI, and it will also be the night they return to Good Time Charlie's in Tupelo for another big regional TV taping. So go to IWFSlam.com for all the info. OWO Wrestling returns to Amory, Mississippi on January 24th at the Community Center. Superstar Bill Dundee will be on the card, as well as all your favorite OWO stars. So go to the OWO Facebook page. That's facebook.com/OWO. Or you can go to OWOWrestling.com for information on how you can get your tickets in advance. Also, the IWA Deep South Carnage Cup 10 happens in Jasper, Tennessee on February 28th and March the 1st. Come out and celebrate 10 years of Southern ultraviolence and what will be the biggest Carnage Cup yet. After 10 years, they're planning on having a huge night of action, and there's some big stars lined up. And if you want to find out all the information, go to IWADeepSouth.com or check out future episodes of Locals of Legends Wrestling Radio, where we will be telling you all about the upcoming Carnage Cup. Next week, I'll be joined by my guest, Texas legend Rudy Boy Gonzalez. Rudy Gonzalez has been in the business for a long time.